This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to the preview show brought to you by the No Name Never podcast in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. I am, of course, not Natalie Bromley. I am producer Matt, and I'm here with a chock full show to keep you going until Sunday at lunchtime to fill those hours and hopefully disperse some of that nervous energy that I'm sure is coursing around many Burnley households over these next 36 hours. In the show tonight, we will hear from George Poole and Tom Whittaker, who got together and recorded a little bit of a chat about how they're feeling ahead of the big match on Sunday. We will also hear from the opposition. We have an opposition view as always, and this time we're going deep behind enemy lines with the Phil Bird equivalent. From the other side, we've got Matt Sillitoe, who is the voice of Ewood Park. And we will also hear from Adam Dennett, who has got an FPL update for us ahead of the last weekend of Premier League fixtures before the World Cup break. So lots to fit in into this episode. But of course, no preview show would be complete without our very own Statman Dave. Dave, welcome along. How are you doing?
Hello, Matt. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. I'm glad we navigated through another round of the League Cup this week. It was good to get a win back on the board after Saturday lunchtime's capitulation in Yorkshire. You were at the Crawley match on Tuesday night. How did you see it? What were your thoughts on the players that got minutes on Tuesday?
Yeah, it was a bold selection, 9 changes and a chance to give some of the rest of the squad a game. And it looked a little bit dicey at one time. We had plenty of possession, but got caught by a goal on the break. And we were patient. We kept in it and we got the equaliser quickly. And then we kept going in the second half and we got a couple of goals towards the end. But I think as soon as the second goal went in, it was pretty much tied on that it was going to be a positive result at that point. They were probably playing for penalties most of the second half and they were hoping that they would hold on and they weren't able to. The sort of tidal wave of attacks towards the goal, they couldn't quite hold off in the end. And Burnley worthy winners, but a little bit of a scare.
Yeah, a couple of significant moments, I think, on Tuesday. There was a first goal from open play for club legend Ashley Barnes and another one of his accidental assists as well, and also a couple of significant debuts as well. So a couple more names for you to add to your lists.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure it was accidental. I thought it was quite a neat flick for the assist he got in the second half, and a well taken goal as well. Did well with a header, and yes, we were discussing it, myself and Phil Bird, pre-match. We'd had a little bit of a tip off, and then we saw the team sheet and a 16-year-old on the bench who, because the way the match had gone, managed to get on. So we had two debuts. We had a 21-year-old, I think, Marcel Lewis, Cambridge-born, ex-Chelsea, and had been out in Belgium and been picked up for the under-21s. And then young, Joe Bores from Crosby near Liverpool. And he was the first 16-year-old to represent Burnley this century. There's not been that many since World War II. We were looking back and the likes of Terry Pashley, Jason Harris, Dave Thomas, Eric Probert. I think they were the only ones post-war. There were a few pre-war as well, but it's quite unusual to have such a young player playing for Burnley. He's born New Year's Day 1986, so he's coming up 17 in a month or two. But yes, he's 2006. But it's really good to get some young players into the side, and he only got a minute or two, but that's the debut, and hopefully he can push on from there.
Absolutely, and last night we saw who we were going to get in the next round, and it's an interesting tie for a number of reasons, really, isn't it?
Yes, Manchester United at Old Trafford away. That was actually the last away game I went to. I've not been to an away match since our win at Old Trafford. So, it'll be an interesting one. Be a bigger allocation, I think, for the league games. You only get about 3,000 at Old Trafford. For the cup games, they push it out, and I think you're allowed about 7,000, something like that. So I think there'll be a decent contingent of Clarets going over there and making some noise at Old Trafford and pit our wits against a mid-table Premier League side, let's say.
Oh, meow. I think I'm right in thinking that that'll be the first match after the break as well, whereas we'll have had a couple under our belts by that point. So
yes.
So, hope you know, we may be more in the groove than they are. They might be a little rusty, but who knows?
We could be missing a few players as well. I think the World Cup final's on the 18th, and that match is the midweek, so it's week commencing the 19th. So it's hot on the heels of the World Cup final.
Absolutely, but we're getting ahead of ourselves because, of course, what we have to deal with first is the small matter of this weekend. And before we get to that, last time out, we didn't set you a quiz question as such, but we were interested to hear if any of our listeners could think of a Burnley goal that had been scored later than the 10th minute of added time, as was the case in the 3-2 win over Rotherham United.
I suspected there weren't any later goals, and none of our listeners seem to be able to suggest one that was scored any later than that. So until we find any information to contradict it, we'll work on the basis that Halil Dervisoglu's late goal the other week is the ultimate late Burnley goal.
Now, as there'll be a break from Championship football while the World Cup is on, we won't be setting a quiz question in this episode, but stay tuned to the end for your chance to submit a quiz question of your own. So, finally, we do get to this weekend. It feels like it's been a long time coming since the fixtures were announced in June. And we start, as always, with the head-to-head record. So, Dave, over to you.
This Sunday's match will be the 91st East Lancashire Derby in the league, meaning that prior to the current campaign, the two clubs have spent 45 seasons together in the league since 1888. 34 of those previous seasons together have been in the top flight, with another 11 in the second tier. And it's those previous 11 second-tier league games at Turf Moor which we'll take a closer look at. Although the two teams were among the 12 clubs who formed the Football League in 1888, it wasn't until the 1930s that our paths crossed in the second tier. After a goalless draw in October 1936, Burnley won the other two home league games that decade. Firstly, there was a 3-1 victory in April 1938, followed by a 3-2 victory in October 1938, with Ron Hornby scoring the 82nd minute winner. There were several more top flight meetings in the intervening period until both teams met again in the second division in the late 1970s. Once again, Burnley had the better of it in that decade, starting with a 3-1 win in April 1977. The next two Turf Moor League meetings were on consecutive Boxing Days in 1977 and 1978. In 1977, Rovers came out on top with a 3-2 win, which was described by the Burnley Express headline as Rovers hand out a lesson in teamwork. But the Clarets gained revenge exactly 12 months later with a 2-1 win on Boxing Day 1978, thanks to first-half goals from Paul Fletcher and Peter Noble. Future Claret, Kevin Hurd, scored Rovers' consolation goal in the second half. Into the 1980s, and there's just one game on our list, that was a narrow 1-0 defeat for Burnley in late December 1982, as Simon Garner, he scored the only goal, and then we had to wait almost 18 years until December 2000. Despite being at home, Burnley were underdogs, but played well until Jason McAteer put the visitors ahead just before the break. Kevin Ball later saw red for what he described as a clash of shins with David Dunn, and Marcus Bent put the result beyond doubt with a second goal towards the end. There have been just three more second-tier home games since then. The match in December 2012 ended in a 1-1 draw thanks to a late equaliser from Sam Bokes, and in September 2013, Junior Stanislas gave us the lead before we were pegged back by a late goal from Jordan Rhodes. That just leaves one more match, which was a 1-0 Burnley win in March 2016, as an Andre Gray penalty was the only difference between the two sides. So overall, Burnley have won 5, drawn 3 and lost 3 of our previous 11 second-tier home league games at Turf Moor. And we'll be looking for another W to add to the list this weekend.
Absolutely. That'd be a great thing to have to head into the World Cup break, a win over them lot. Now, despite the rivalry, there's quite a number of players who have actually pulled on the shirts of both Burnley and Blackburn Rovers. Looking down the list that you have compiled for us, Dave, I was trying to pick a couple out, really, for a particular reason, and I settled on a couple of names who played for Burnley after winning Champions League medals. And that would be, of course, David May and Andy Cole. I think I'm right in saying. Yep. And there can't be many players who have played for Burnley after winning a Champions League or even before winning a Champions League. So for me, I was looking at the list and they kind of stood out for me for those reasons. Obviously, there's some other great names on there who've helped us in recent promotion seasons as well, like some Michael Keane and David Jones. Is anybody you want to highlight off there, Dave?
I think going back, I mean, it was quite a well-trodden path in the 60s, but more from Burnley to Rovers. We had the likes of Adam Blacklaw, obviously a goalkeeping legend at Burnley. After he'd played at Turf Moor, he went to Ewood Park. John Kennelly also, went to Manchester United in between, but also ended up at Ewood Park. And then players come in the other way as well. We had likes of Keith Newton, who came to Burnley later in his career. So that was treading the path the other way. And also Kevin Hurd as well. I mentioned Kevin Hurd in our previous head-to-head matches. He spent, he actually ended up playing more games for Burnley than he did for Rovers. Other ones on the list as well. Lenny Johnrose, of course. Going down the list, and then one who's not on our list but has since played for Burnley, because we do the cut off of this at the end of last season, is Taylor Harwood-Bellis. He played half a season on loan at Ewood Park, and obviously now he's on loan with us.
Very good. Now, at this point, we would usually bring you a memory match, but I believe we're going to do something slightly different for this occasion, Dave.
Yes, we are. I'm sure that our listeners will have their own memories of the East Lancashire Derby, but rather than singling out a specific match, we're going to revisit something which was written for No Nay Never back in our earlier days, but which we thought would be good to hear again now that we're resuming our rivalry with our near neighbours. Here is We Are These People, written and spoken by Thomas Pickles for No Nay Never.
We are born and bred, shown and led, through streets upon which our forefathers tread. We are fetched and fed, our colours which spread, from stitch to skin, from bone to within. We are taught and told, thoughts from old, ingrained into the beliefs we hold. We are these people, together, humble, honest, proud and prepared. In a corner of the world, between hills and old mills, we gather, eyes narrowed, foreheads wrinkled and throats strained. Stories spinning, losing, winning. We are these people, together. We are our own heartbeat, we are our own pulse, we are the words which echo in the lulls. We are these people, with our hearts on our sleeves which beat the cobbled streets beneath our feet. We are these people, with history hooked and hemmed from head to heel. We are these people, and we feel every step, every stagger, every tackle, every clatter, it matters. We are these people. And at a party of parities, we're only separated by similarities. We are these people.
And you can see that video if you go to any of our social channels or our YouTube channel. We'll be sharing that over the weekend again ahead of the match. Now, as we mentioned earlier, we have an opposition view as always. And this week we can hear from the voice of Ewood Park and the voice of the studio operator for Rovers Match Days, Ewood Park PA announcer, Matt Sillitoe. Matt, over to you.
Here's your 3 minutes of wisdom, if you like. By the way, I'm getting absolute conkers thrown at me for appearing on a Burnley fans podcast. But there we go. So, yes. Look, I was asked the question in the office the other day, actually, from an outsider. Outside East Lancashire, who actually asked me the question, do you think this is the biggest East Lancashire derby there's been? And I think he's got a point, you know. I think in recent memory, anyway, this could be one of the biggest. And praise is due to both clubs, you know, for being progressive in the way that they've played this season. They are, neither side have turned into a stodgy championship outfit who've signed has-beens. There's been a progressive nature of how both clubs have done recruitment, and I think that's fair enough for both sides. On us, in terms of our lineup and how we'll look, we made a lot of changes on Wednesday night at West Ham. I imagine a lot of those will be reversed for this fixture. I think a lot of attention will obviously be on Ben Brereton Diaz as the star man. Sky, I imagine, will go big on him. But concentrate too much on him and you forget about a Ryan Hedges for me, or a Sam Schmodix, who have really come on over the last couple of months or so and for me can become more dangerous than Ben himself. Ben is your goal scorer. And when we're playing counter-attacking football, he could be the player to win a game for us. But if you focus too much on him, then a creator in Ryan Hedges or a Sam Schmodix who's popped up with a goal or two recently could be someone who wins the game for us. I think it's interesting because, as your listenership will know, your biggest weakness of your own team. You watch them week in, week out. Blackburn's biggest weakness is the first goal, and it's how you start games. And if you press us high, which I know Burnley have done this season on occasions, you will get some joy. We're a progressive team, but we're also a team that will develop or in development. And if you were to press us and force us into mistakes by us playing out from the back, there's an opportunity for you there. To exploit us and get that first goal. If Burnley get the first goal, I think we'll struggle. We are not good. I don't think we've come from behind at all in the league this year. However, if we get the first goal, we're very, very good at winning games of football. Whether it's a belief, whether it's body language, who knows? But that first goal is absolutely massive, and it'll be massive in a derby game, I imagine. From a Burnley point of view, the moments I've seen them this season, your Achilles heel seems to be crosses into the box, whether that be from set pieces or in open play. And that's something that we could unlock. And we do have that capability of doing that. We can soak up long periods of pressure and hit teams on the counter-attack with crosses into the box. And we've been very, very clinical recently, which gives me hope. Whether that's false hope or not, I don't know. In terms of a prediction, it's difficult to predict. It's going to be tight, isn't it? Either way, it's going to be tight, but it's down to that first goal. If you'd have asked me a month ago, I'd have said, look, I will take a draw because you were flying and we weren't. We were stuttering a little bit. I've got hope and I actually think we might be able to do it just for the reasons I've given you, in that we can soak up pressure and have the capability of being very clinical this season. So I think a 2-1 win for us might be on the cards. But we'll see. We'll see. It's an exciting occasion. I'm looking forward to it. Everyone should look forward to the occasion. First versus second, potentially. Whoever wins goes top of the championship. It's set up to be one of the best games of the season. And I hope everybody enjoys it. Except if you win.
Thank you, Matt, for that balanced and very professional set of thoughts ahead of Sunday. So just one more detail to cover for the match itself, and that is the referee. Dave, who's got this unenviable task of refereeing the East Lancashire derby?
David Coote of Newark in Nottinghamshire has been given the task of keeping order at this Sunday's East Lancashire derby. Not only is he in the select one group of English officials taking charge mostly of Premier League games, but for the last couple of years, he's also been on the FIFA international list. His 15 previous Burnley matches have resulted in 5 wins for Burnley, 5 draws and 5 defeats, and stretch back just over a decade to October 2012. In the 3 Burnley games he took charge of last season, we lost at home to Brighton, drew at Arsenal and lost at home to Aston Villa. That was as recently as May. There were no red cards in any of those previous 15 Burnley matches he's taken charge of. And of course, we wish him the best of luck for Sunday.
Absolutely. I think we're all just after a very entertaining match of football between what are the top 2 teams currently in the Championship. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the show, fellow panellists George and Tom got together yesterday evening and they recorded their thoughts and discussions ahead of the big derby on Sunday, and we can hear from them.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Now.
Hello and welcome to this week's informal chat feature in this week's Non-Ever podcast. It's me, George Poole, and I'm here with the man of the hour, Tom Whittaker, who not only lives quite away from Burnley, he actually made the trip to Crawley on Tuesday night. Now, I must admit, I'm coming up from Bath for this Sunday's game, but there wasn't a chance I was coming up for the Crawley game, as historic a moment as it was. But Tom, talk us through the game, talk us through your trip and your travel. How was it? Was it worth the effort going to?
Well, I went to the last round, Shrewsbury away, and that was an incredibly tedious affair. It was like watching a training game. And there was a little bit of that as well. Crawley, you know, just came and put 10 men behind the ball for the old game. But I thought we were more excited to watch. It's nice having Benton and Zorori to just give you another dimension. And although I was very worried seeing Benton starting, because I thought Zorori's going to get injured and miss the game on Sunday. Thankfully, you know, no injuries, touch wood. But he did liven it up. Every time he got the ball, he just beat 2 or 3 and went the ball in. And obviously, we got the result in the end, which is nice. It was only 2 championship teams that have gone through. So, yeah, it was an enjoyable enough evening. Saw some goals, saw a win, as you say. The historic first ever meeting of Burnley and Crawley. So I can tell my grandkids that I was there for that. And not a good evening. I enjoyed it.
Well, I must admit, I didn't even watch the game. I watched the highlights. I was that disinterested in the cup this week of all weeks. But I was delighted to see on Twitter that Ashley Barnes was back to his best, scoring a goal, scoring an offside goal, and even getting a classic Ashley Barnes assist where he has no idea where the ball's going, but it somehow bounces off him and ends up going to one of our men. So I think that was the highlight of the evening for me. I mean, Tom, talk us through. What a beautiful header from Ashley, and then a delightful accidental assist.
It was a great header. Maybe he's found his level a little bit against League Two defenders. It was a bit frustrating in the second half because the first half as well, actually, the amount of time they just flash a ball into the box, and it was just Barnes there, and he'd draw the defenders. You know, like, he loves to make that run to the near post and draw the defenders. And he never got in the end of anything apart from obviously the goal that he scored. But there was no one else there, so I felt a bit for him. He was getting involved, and he didn't spend the whole game throwing himself to the floor. So that was it was nice to see. Hopefully he's turned over a bit of a new leaf in that regard.
Yeah, hopefully give him a bit of confidence for when he is needed in the league fixtures. And obviously turning our attention to the league, but in terms of the Crawley game, we are happy to see, I think it was 9 changes that we made in the end. I mean, you mentioned that Benson, I think we're all a bit like, oh, Benson's starting, let's hope he doesn't get injured. But I was personally quite happy when I saw the team. I thought there was an argument to say Benson obviously needs minutes starting a game if he's going to do the same on Sunday. So I was pretty happy to see that team. And then for obviously, I feel bad now, the young lad, Bowers, was it Joe Bowers, who came on 16, I think the third youngest Burnley debutant since World War II. So that was quite interesting to see, and just nice for a few of the other lads to get a run out.
Yeah, like I say, minutes in the legs. And like I say, the main thing was no injuries, and we didn't get any injuries, touch wood. Obviously, all eyes were on West Ham yesterday, hoping that Brereton Diaz might get a slight knock that would rule him out just for the weekend, but not to be, I don't think, unfortunately. I think they had the same idea as us, 11 changes. And to be fair, they got a really good win, and I wonder how much that will affect the dynamics going into the weekend.
Yeah, I saw Brereton Diaz scored as well, and I thought, it's really not ideal ahead of Sunday. They've definitely got the confidence and the wind in their sails, but I suppose we have in some way, you know, getting back to winning ways against Crawley. And, I mean, we've been flying. The club, everything that's coming out from the club, it seems like everyone's very much looking forward to to Sunday's game. I mean, before we talk about ourselves, I suppose we'll just touch on the West Ham game that Blackburn played last night, winning on penalties. A real dagger in the heart when I was checking for updates on BBC Sport. But Brereton Diaz, like you just said, I was personally hoping to see him get a little knock last night, but it doesn't seem to be the case. I've watched them a few times this season, and he just seems a class above everyone else, really. Not only is it like it's his on the ball, but just as a physical, you stand like, because I've sat near him in a few games, and he's a Hulk. He's a proper big unit, and you just think he looks ready made for the Premier League. And I suppose the way he played against West Ham last night, if the Rovers, heaven forbid, let's hope they don't go up. But if they don't go up, he'll certainly be getting a big move next summer. And I think he's one to look out for on Sunday.
Yeah, I was quite surprised they didn't cash in on him in the summer, because obviously only 1 year left on his contract. You'd think their chances of going up, I mean, you'd have said in the summer they weren't great. But, I mean, fair play to him, kept hold of him. I suppose similar to us with Tarkowski, they thought, let's take the gamble and see if we can earn a lot more money by keeping him. Obviously, had a fantastic season. The first half of last season was brilliant. Petered out a bit the second half. Been pretty steady this season. He seems to score the same goal a lot. He's like you say, he's massive. And he's running in from the left-hand side. And he's not, like, silky or anything. The defenders just bounce off him. And then he just cuts inside, and he did the same thing last night, cut inside. It wasn't great defending, but cut inside and put it in the top corner. It does worry you a bit, because our fullbacks are not noticed for their fantastic defensive ability, but that's just one of them. It's the back post header that worries me. It's one swinging it over from the right, and Brereton Diaz getting up with Coutinho or Roberts. But I suppose, in a way, it's not, you know, if he was injured and then we beat them, it'd be like, oh yeah, but you only beat us because Brereton Diaz was playing. So there is that as well. You know, if they've got the best team out and we've got our best team out and we win, then that's the best way to do it, isn't it? So yeah, I'm quite looking forward to watching him play. He was obviously quite a talking point in English football last season, and you know, maybe it'll be a good audition for when we go up. We can have him on a frame or something.
That would be ideal. It seems a far cry. It seems a far cry from a few years ago, when everyone was mocking Brenn Berrettini. He was signed for $7.5 million, and then all of a sudden, now he started bagging the goals in after he was terrible for the first year he was there. You thought, what on earth have they spent all this money on? I think he was 19 at the time, but it's certainly paying dividends at the moment. Now, Tom, where are your nerves at right now ahead of this weekend? Because for me, it's been sort of on the back burner until Crawley was out the way. And then yesterday and today, I've suddenly started to actually think about Sunday and think of the repercussions either way on the result. And I've started to get enormously nervous and I spend too much time thinking about it.
Yeah, I don't know. For me, it's never as bad, I don't think, as some, because I'm not from Burnley. I don't live in Burnley. I know a couple of Blackburn fans that live around here, but it's not the same. It's not like I'm going into an office where there's 20 Blackburn fans waiting to take the mick if we get beat on Sunday. So I don't feel it quite as bad. I've been the same as you. I've had a nice little buffer this week. Went to the Crawley game, and then last night I was at Forest versus Spurs, so I wasn't really thinking about the Blackburn game at that point. But now that the build-up's starting, you're reading the interviews and things in the press, you're watching the press conference and things like that. And I'd be lying if I said I wasn't nervous, especially with the way the league's set up. You know, it's not just bragging rights at stake. Even if we were playing like QPR and they were second, it would be a really big game, because, you know, it might determine whether we're first or third come the World Cup. And, you know, I know there's a long way to go even after the World Cup's finished, but it would be really nice to be sat on top of the table with those bragging rights in your back pocket for the whole of the World Cup, wouldn't it? So, yeah, like I said, I don't feel it as keenly as some. But, you know, the nearer we get to it, the more you're thinking about it. And it's definitely not just another game. And I think the fact that it's so rare as well, we don't play it so often, it's that enhances that as well.
Yeah, it's remarkable, isn't it? Obviously, we didn't play them for a long, long time before. They tried to haunt us with the 34 years, and we'd played them, you know, maybe 10, 11, 12 times in that period. But now I'm feeling a bit more sympathetic towards that view, because now it's 12 years since they beat us, and we've played them what, like 5 times in that period. But that's irrelevant. My nerves are starting to kick up. It always, this game always feels, I mean, obviously it's different, but it's just massive. I know my dad, I just got off the phone with my dad before we got on the podcast, and he was just saying he was just absolutely dreading it. If he had an option of, oh, do you want to draw Blackburn in the next round of the Carabao Cup, he'd say straight away, no, don't want to play them. Like, he hates it. But he went to school in Blackburn when he was a kid, so he was commuting from Burnley, from Paddington to Blackburn. And he got a bit of stick for being a Burnley fan, so he just detests them. And then when I was younger, everyone who was of my generation was born in Blackburn Hospital, because Burnley didn't have like a maternity unit at that time. So I was born in Blackburn Hospital, and I'm sat here in a claret and blue shirt, so something went right. But it meant that because people were born in Blackburn, and B, Blackburn were the superior team at the time, everyone around Worley and Clitheroe supported Blackburn, and everyone loved to hoard it over me. And the amount of stick I got for so many years until we finally beat them in 2014, that win. I mean, Tom, what are your memories of finally beating Blackburn in 2014? I remember it to the day I die, 9th of March, 2014. What are your memories of that day? Because for me, it was just absolutely monumental.
Yeah, it was. I know that the bubble games at the minute are not slated to go ahead this year, and there's a lot that I think is wrong with it. You know, I don't have any football-related offences to my name, and I sort of resent a bit being treated like I have. But the sort of anticipation you get by being on the bus, it does feel like you're going into a war zone. You know, it's like you're going into battle for your club, and it does build the atmosphere. And you obviously got bust in really early, and you're hanging about, the tension's rising. They were 1-0 up. We were lucky we weren't 2-0 down. We weren't playing well at all. And yeah, just the way we beat him, it was just like a 1-2 sucker punch, wasn't it? It's fantastic. There's another one where it wasn't just the fact that we beat them, it was what it meant for our season. You know, I think we went something like 7 points clear of third place without winning, something like that. We built a big gap. So it was like, not only have we just done them in the back garden for like the first time in 13 odd years, we're going up and you're staying down. And it was like, oh, this is what it's all about. This is why you traipse up and down the country. It's for moments like this. Yeah. One of the best memories I've had watching Burnley for sure. That was a fantastic feeling to win that.
It really was. And it like you say, I like the fact that you brought up the fact that we didn't play well, and it made it all the more sweeter because the year before in 2013, I remember going there. I was right down in the bottom left of that stand when Dunn put the equaliser in, right in front of us. And I just remember absolutely, I was just crying my eyes out. I couldn't believe what I'd just witnessed after that game, you know, we'd played well, we deserved to win. And then Dunn did what he did horribly, and he was offside as well. It was absolutely scandalous. And then on top of that, you had, when they came to turf the following season, the 13-14 season, again, we played really well. We were a really good team that year, and we played some really good football. And who was it? Was it not Cam Williamson? He played pats for New Zealand. Lee Williamson, I believe. Yeah, Lee Williamson. Lee Williamson just rugby tackled Danny Ings when through on goal. So it felt like just incredible injustice again. So
as well in that game, it was like Michael Duff cleared it and it hit Jordan Rhodes and went in somehow. And it was like, where did that come from? Yeah, like you said, that's when you start feeling we're never going to beat these somehow.
That's exactly what I felt. It was like, we're just never going to do it. It's obviously not meant to be. And the amount of stick I got in school all the time. And then, to go to Ewood that time, and as an automatic promotion, you know, favourite at that point, but play some absolutely awful football. And like you said, we should have been 2-0 down. Jordan Rhodes hit the post. We were getting battered. So then to come back with the 1-2 sucker punch, I mean, those names will forever, like, live long in the memory. Ross Wallace whipping in that cross for Shackle's header, and then him cutting down the right, squaring it across. Barnes with another beautiful accidental assist, just sticking his foot out for Danny Ings to just, you know, swipe it home. And then even it was a scuffed finish, like it hit Robinson's leg and bounced in, but
down the middle, didn't it? Yeah. It takes you seconds to realise, oh, that's actually gone in. Oh my God.
Yeah. And then it was just pure ecstasy, and you just couldn't believe what was happening for the last 10 minutes. And like you say, the fact it's a bubble fixture, it made it all the more special, just the anticipation beforehand. But then the going back, I mean, I've told this story so many times, but every bridge between Blackburn and Burnley was just had like these elderly women, elderly men, people who couldn't make the game, but they were Burnley fans or from the area. And they were all just like waving their flags, blowing horns as like the buses were coming past. It was literally, it was like you said, it was like coming back from a battle and we'd won. So yeah, incredible memories. And I just remember like just tearing up on the bus home, but at least this time it was happy tears. So for me, this Sunday is just, it's a weird one. Like you said, it's probably got as high a stakes as I've ever seen, apart from the time we did win, but that was because of the result. But this time we're going to be probably second and third. You know, we're probably expecting Sheffield United to win on Saturday and go top momentarily. But I don't know, Tom, can you remember another time when the stakes were this high in terms of league position? Because it's never been like this that I've ever seen.
No, not really while I've been going. I know the first time we played them when I was going, like 2000-2001, we were hovering around the playoffs that season, but we weren't really in the automatic shape-up, whereas they went up automatically that season, gave us a drumming at Ewood. Other than that, like I think since they came down, they've never really been in the promotion picture at the end. And even that year we were in the Prem, they were never really looking like going down. So, yeah, something where it's not just the case of one of us have got something to aim at or one of us needs the points or something. Both of us are going for the same goal and we both want the points. Both had a good start, you know, they're obviously a good side because the amount of wins they pick up, and they've got that ridiculous record of there's not been an equaliser in any of their games yet this season. You know, they've never come from behind to get anything, but also once they've gone in front, they've not relinquished the lead, so it puts so much tension on the start of that game. You know, if we get the first goal, then you think their belief will drop, their heads will drop a bit, they'll have to come out and maybe we can pick them off. But then if they get the first one, you know, it's the opposite, isn't it? So it's yeah, there's a lot riding on it, and even if you're someone like me who's not necessarily got a huge dose of the rivalry in the day-to-day life, doesn't spend that much time interacting with Blackburn fans, it's there's still a lot at stake even without that.
Certainly, and it's not only, it doesn't make it just daunting, but I think it makes it exciting, which is quite a nice thing. Like, I've seen a lot in the media this week of just, you know, neutrals being excited. Obviously, broadcasters are really, really excited for it. I think James Olcott, who does like Copper 90 stuff, even said he was going to do like an analysis video, which you just wouldn't see normally. It's that big a game. And I think there's quite a buzz because, like you said, it's so few and far between. The last time we played was 2017, that Carabao Cup, and we were going for seventh that year, and they were in League One, and I've never seen a more one-sided derby game, because we went to Ewood and it was like men versus boys, and it was like it just didn't feel the same because it was so unfair, beautifully unfair, but unfair. So it's the first league fixture in 6 years against them, and I'm absolutely buzzing for Sunday. But in terms of the two teams, I've seen talk on Twitter, a lot of people obviously, we jest about this, but they ask Alan Nixon's opinion for one reason or another. And he said, you know, I'm not saying who I think is going to win until I see the team, because he wants to see one name, and that's whether Jay Rodriguez plays or not. So, Tom, would you agree with reluctant Nico as reluctant Whittaker? Would you agree with that Jay Rodriguez is the key to this game?
Yeah, the ultimate fence sitter himself. if you asked him what colour the sky was, he'd say he'll have to get back to you. I think Rodriguez will be fit. By the sounds of it, he was very close against Sheffield United. You know, I think he travelled, didn't he? And it was a late fitness test. Obviously, no point risking him in a League Cup game against Crawley. So maybe I'm being naively optimistic there, but it sounded to me like he was touch and go for Sheffield United, and therefore you'd expect with a week without playing that he'd be back. I think that's right in terms of, we did see against Sheffield United, there wasn't really a plan B for what to do without Rodriguez, and I don't think we've got enough depth in that position. Obviously, Dervişoğlu couldn't play on Tuesday night because he was cup tied, and Barnes, I think we've seen Barnes in a championship level player, so you will be struggling if Rodriguez isn't playing there, so we can't be doing Teller up front and Bastian at number 10 or whatever again. But yeah, I'm pretty confident Rodriguez will play, and that, you know, having a local born player, we've seen in the past from their end that can make the difference. So hopefully that works in our favour this time.
Yeah, I can't think of anything sweeter than J Rod scoring against Blackburn. It's remarkable. He's never played in an East Lancashire derby. You know, he was injured that season in the Premier League we had in 2009/10. And then obviously never played in one. So this is going to be a big game. And I've seen, I think, is it Kiko, his dad, who's put on Twitter videos of the old song with Peter Kay opening up and then it going into the new Rodriguez chant, which is well worth a watch. So if you haven't seen it, listeners, go to find Kiko Rodriguez on Twitter. You've got to watch it. It'll get you very excited for Sunday. But I tend to agree that Rodriguez, it's not only going forward, it's defensively. The way we were picked apart by those set pieces against Sheffield United. Now, if he's fit on Sunday, you just put Rodriguez on Brereton Diaz at every set piece, because he's very, it's something you don't think about too much with strikers, but he's really good at defending set pieces, is Rodriguez, because A, he's tall, B, he's built, and C, he plays with the heart of a lion. He really gets stuck in, and it'll only escalate on Sunday. So I really hope he's fit, and it does sound like he's going to be fit. But elsewhere on the pitch, where do you see the key matchups being? And who would you like to see? Because some players pick themselves, but there's a few positions like right back, whether we play Vitinho or Roberts in the centre and midfield. Will Cork and Cullen both be fit? On the wing, do we play Teller? Do we drop Teller now Rodriguez is back? Where are the key decisions, do you think, that company has to mull over between now and Sunday?
I think, touch wood, it doesn't sound like we're missing many. Cork and Cullen obviously both back. Benson and Zorori both played on, apart on Tuesday night. I suppose there's that question of whether you start both of them again. I certainly would in this game. I think it's important to get the first goal, so I think I'd have them both. I think right back, it's a tough call. They're much of a muchness at the minute, I think. I wouldn't be too disappointed if either of them's playing. I think maybe Roberts is maybe slightly more defensively minded, so maybe that's a shout, especially with Brereton Diaz being on that side. But other than that, I think we can get our best team out there, really, and I'd like to see us play an attacking team. We spoke last week about maybe playing Taylor as a more defensive-minded wing-back in some games, but I think for me it's got to be there. You know, the probably our best team, which is Muric, and then you've got Matson, Bayer-Hall, Bellis, Roberts or Vitinho, I don't mind, really. They're already inventing that wide. You've got Cullen and Cork sitting, and then you've got Teller and Rodriguez, Brownhill with next to Teller and Rodriguez. So, yeah, that's the team I pick, attacking team. I imagine that's the team I'll go with. I won't lie, there's a lot of, when I look at Blackburn Rovers' team sheet, I don't know a lot of players. I think a lot of them are quite young lads, aren't they? This is not to disrespect them, because they're obviously having a really good season. They've got a lad called Wharton, and they've got brothers, Anthony. Scott is the centre half, the older one, and is it Andy, the younger one? I can't mind his name off the top of my head. I think it's Andy, but he's apparently getting rave reviews. He's meant to be a really kind of tidy midfielder, calling sort of that position. So I've heard good things about him, but a lot of them I don't really know a lot about. So there's no point in saying, oh, let's put Brownhill on to neutralise the threat of Ryan Hedges or whatever, because I couldn't say a thing about Ryan Hedges, to be honest. Probably just because I've not watched much of the Championship in the last few years. But as I say, that's not to disrespect them, because they're obviously a good side. Hopefully they've just done a bit more homework than me, and they'll have an idea of what teams to put out. But I'd like to see us impose our game on them. You know, they're beatable. They're a lot more beatable than we are if you go over the season and the amount of defeats each team has suffered. So let's get at them. Let's get an early goal. Let's watch them fold. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah. One thing I will pick up there is, would you start Teller? Because I'm just thinking, if you've got Cork and Cullen and then Brownhill sitting behind Rodriguez and then Zorori and Benson either side, is there room? There's not room for Teller, if I'm being right. 4-2-3-1. No room for Nathan.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, if you've got Cork and Cullen.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, because he's been playing.
Yeah, J-Rod or Brownhill.
He's both played on that, but obviously Brownhill was out once, yeah. Mm. No, that's a good point. I can't even do my maths, let alone my research. Yes, well, maybe. Well, I guess you're picking from two or three, then, aren't you, for Zorori, Benson, and Teller. So maybe you'll think, maybe I'll do the old Benson off the bench trick again. Again, that's probably one where I think I'm not too disappointed with whichever he goes for. There's three good players, Teller, Zorori, and Benson, and it's good to know that you've got one of them to bring on as well.
Yeah, certainly. It makes such a change, doesn't it? And it does just fill me with a bit more excitement for after Touchwood. Oh, gosh almighty. Touchwood will have a few players back after the World Cup break. I'm thinking Scott Twine, if we manage to sign him on a permanent from MK Dons in January. And then obviously you've got Westwood to slot into the midfield to rotate with Cork and Cullen. And then one guy I'm really looking forward to seeing again is Darko Chernyov. Now, I think it might be a bit of a long-term one, that one, but he was really good when he first signed. So, yeah, it's nice to have options off the bench. So, in terms of the score, we'll wrap things up for our little chat before we pass you back to Natalie and Dave on the main show. Tom, what are your predictions for Sunday? Who do you see the goal scorers being? How much are you looking forward to this? And just, you know, give me everything.
Yeah, as I say, equal parts nervous and excited. I don't see it being. I'd love to mention earlier that shellacking we got at Ewood a few years ago. I'd love to avenge that and stick a few past them, because I think even all the wins we've had against them recently, they've all been by the odd goal or two. You know, it's not been a complete drumming. That League Cup one, we didn't sort of turn the screw on, we could have. So I'd love to say we win 3 or 4-0 and really flatten them, but I don't think there's that much between the teams. So let's have a 1 or 2 nil. Let's just kind of edge our way past. Let's get 3 points. Doesn't matter how we do it. And you touched on it earlier. It would be fantastic to see Rodriguez score.
Yeah, that's the dream. I think for me, I want to see us play our passing game. I want us to show them, you know, this is the style of football we play. This is a completely different Burnley. You know, really dominate them. And the dreams, J-Rod scoring. Now, my dad said earlier he's hoping for, you know, 3-0 after 20 minutes, a bit like, you know, Wigan, just to take the nerves off. But I can't see that happening. You know, it's going to be a tense affair. I think we'll struggle to play our noble game because there'll be a lot of energy in that stadium, and it's sometimes hard to bottle that up. So I'm thinking it'd be a tight game, but I can see Jay Rodriguez has got to get on the score sheet. And, you know, we've got to get a win. We've got to get a win and we've got to avoid defeat. That's my ambitions for Sunday. But just really looking forward to it. There's plenty of games you win over the years, plenty of derbies, you know, Preston and Wigan, etc. But these ones just stand out. I think it was Brownhill who's talked to, they've done a Burnley thing today where he said, I've been reading so much about this and every goal scorer, you become a hero. And it's exactly like that, you know, over the years, you think, like I said earlier, the fact Shackle, you left us in a bit of like a weird situation, you know, there's a bit of resentment. But still, in my mind, he's a bit of a legend because of that equaliser. You think Danny Ings, I mean, the pictures that have gone around this week where Burnley have been editing the images, it's all of the heroes of recent times. And then you think Scott Arfield with that goal and then running the length of the pitch. And, wow, yeah, that's exactly... For the listeners, we're on the podcast. Tom's just pulled a painting off his wall, which is of that Danny Ings with his arms down, you know, in front of the Burnley fans at Ewood after he scored, with everyone, all the Blackburn players on the floor behind him. Just, yeah, those images just stick with you because this game means more. So it's been a pleasure talking about this game. We're all, you could probably tell, giddy, excited, nervous, all of the above for Sunday. But let's get a bouncing atmosphere. Hopefully, I believe there's going to be some Remembrance Sunday things ran by the club. So we'll see what that is on Sunday, but it's just going to be bouncing. Tom, any last words, excitement for Sunday?
Well, I've only got three words for you. Up the claret.
Yes, and on that note, we'll speak to you next week after, touch wood, a win against the noisy neighbours. Thanks, guys, and we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you to George and Tom. Now, Dave, big question. How are you feeling ahead of Sunday? How do you see it going? How do you think Vinton's going to approach this?
Well, he's got plenty of experience in derby games. He played in several between Manchester City and Manchester United, and he's been involved in ones as a manager and obviously as a younger player out in Belgium as well. I think that he's going to be fairly level-headed about it. I think he'll take it all in his stride. I think there are... he will need to make sure the players are primed so he can pass on that experience as well. And I think it's a case of once you get going, it's not just another game. It's never just another game. But the players have almost got to stick to the plans they've had, or the tactics they've had, and try not to let the occasion overtake them, because it can do that sometimes. And basically do what we do best. I think if we play the way we're capable of, we've done very well in matches. We've done very well home and away. We've just had the two away defeats. We're undefeated at Turf Moor in the league, 6 wins and 4 draws so far, and obviously a cup win as well. I think if we can stick to that with the players that are developing as well, then we've got every chance of getting a positive result, and we'll all be shouting that on and from the stands on Sunday afternoon.
One point that our opposition view made, and I think Tom picked up on it as well, is that Rovers this season, when they've gone behind, they've not managed to get back into a game, but when they've gone ahead, they've also been able to hold on to that lead. So do you think the first goal is going to be even bigger than normal in this match, given that kind of statistical history for them this season?
Yeah, we better score first, hadn't we? it's an oddity. I think that, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, it can become psychological, can be a bit of a millstone around a team's neck. But yeah, I mean, we'll just do what we do, and hopefully we can get that early goal. And that does take the pressure off a little bit. I mean, we know that when we have gone in front, we've conceded. So that's kind of the flip side of the coin from that respect. Although we have had other games where we have gone behind and come back. So we've lost and gained points from in that respect during the season to date. I think we just need to make sure we play the way we're capable of. We've got the sort of players, particularly from the wings. We don't know yet who the starting lineup's going to be. We don't know whether perhaps Benson might be kept on the bench. He played almost the full 90 minutes, didn't he, in midweek? whether it may be a case of, you know, we play Zarori and Teller, and then Benson comes on later on. I don't know, but it will obviously we'll find out an hour before kickoff. He's been very effective in both. We've discussed this previously on the podcast, whether he should be starting, whether he should be on the bench. There was some thinking that perhaps, you know, he's more of an impact sub at the moment. But then obviously he started against Sheffield United and scored twice in the first half. So he's more than capable of doing that as well. We've just got to stick with what we know. And I think that if we play to the best of our ability, we will win the match. I mean, we are, I think, favourites being at home. I think if we won at home and got a draw at Ewood Park, we wouldn't be too disappointed. But yeah, it's going to be a tense one on Sunday.
I just assumed that you'd say 1-1.
No, I'm going to go for 2-1 win.
Oh, you're going for what? Sorry,
2-1 win.
A 2-1 win. Are you going into detail? Are we going to get names on that, or you keep staying vague?
I think we'll score first. I think we'll. I think it'll be. We'll go 2-0 up, and then they'll get a consolation, make it a little bit tense towards the end. In terms of goal scorers, it's tied on for J-Rod to get one, isn't it? So I think, assuming he starts, Jay to score the first, and then maybe, I don't know, maybe one from Taylor Harwood-Bellis to get the other one. And then I don't know who's going to score for them. I'm not going to be that precise.
Okay. I think I will also predict a win. I think last Saturday was probably the wake-up call the team needed, and a little bit of a kick and a little bit of a reality check. And I think he'll have done a lot of work with them this week. And he understands the importance of this fixture. And I feel it might be more of a cautious approach. I wouldn't be surprised to see some changes to the back line. I'm going to just go for a 1-0. I think it's going to be tight. And I think we'll be hanging on, and everybody's nerves will be shredded by 2:30. So I'll go for 1-0. And yeah, I think it's nailed on for Jay, really. I think it's that final line in his Burnley chapter, really, is to get a goal in this fixture. So so yeah, I'll go for that. Moving on now to your stat of the week. What have you got for us this week, Dave?
Right, well, despite our recent run of positive results against our fiercest rivals, Burnley have only won once in the last 7 meetings between the two teams at Turf Moor in all competitions. That was the 1-0 win we mentioned earlier in March 2016, when Andre Gray scored from the penalty spot. Prior to that, you have to go back a further 38 years to Boxing Day 1978 for our next most recent win at Turf Moor. On a more positive note, Sean Dyche famously never tasted defeat against Rovers during his time as Burnley manager. And you have to go back over 12 and a half years, or 4,613 days, to the last time the blue and white halves won a match against the Clarets. That's a run of 7 East Lancashire derby games undefeated.
Let's hope it's 8 comes Sunday afternoon. So the final thing we need to do here is hand over to Adam for his Fantasy Premier League update. So, Adam, it's all yours.
Hi, Adam here with a quick Game Week 15 FPL review. Starting off with your team of the week. In goal, Danny Ward from Leicester, keeping a clean sheet in his side's 2-0 win away at Everton. The back three, Gabriel from Arsenal, scoring the winning goal away at Chelsea and keeping a clean sheet. 15 points for Gabriel. Alongside him is FPL Team of the Week regular Kieran Trippier, with another assist to his name and coming off before Newcastle lost their clean sheet away at Southampton in their 4-1 win. Dina completes the back three in Aston Villa's 3-1, scoring in Aston Villa's 3-1 victory against Manchester United. And I should say that this lined up in a 3-4-3 formation. Into midfield, your top scorer of the week, James Tavernier for Bournemouth. A goal and 2 assists and 3 bonus points when they threw away another lead away at Leeds United, 3-1 up, lost 4-3. But Tavernier did his owners proud. Salah back in the goals, 2 goals in Liverpool's victory away at Spurs. Jacob Ramsey on the score sheet for Aston Villa at home to Manchester United. Somerville for Leeds, becoming a bit of a hero this week. Very cheap, down as a defensive midfielder in FPL. But I think he's scored in his last three games now. 13 points, one to keep an eye on. And completing the midfield, Adam Lallana, with a goal and an assist in Brighton's 3-2 win away at Wolves. Up front, Sam Greenwood from Leeds United, another one of the players on the score sheet and three bonus points on Saturday. And completing the lineup, a Man City striker, but not Erling Haaland. Disappointingly, it's Julian Alvarez with a goal and all three bonus points in his side's late victory against Fulham. On to the No Name Ever League. Just a quick rundown of the top five. In fifth place, up into fifth, Alice Flanagan with 922 points. Fourth, down a place, Daniel Shepherd, 930 points. Brad Banks stays in third on 931 points. Up two places into second, Dylan Crowther on 935 points. And maintaining his 25-point lead at the top is Rupert Booth. He sent a nice picture to our socials of his No Name Never sticker for winning October's Manager of the Month. So well done again for that, Rupert. Just onto a couple of brief notes. So a few keen FPL managers were left frustrated last weekend when the site crashed 50 minutes before kickoff and 20 minutes before the deadline, after we got some leaked Man City team news that Foden and Haaland weren't going to start. At home to Fulham. So couldn't make your changes. So maybe just bear that in mind this weekend. Man City, the early kickoff again. Make sure you've made your transfers probably about an hour before, just in case. It is the last game week before the World Cup. So if you've still got a wild card, you've got to use it or you'll lose it. There are a few teams with really good fixtures this weekend that you can target with either your transfers, because you may as well make a transfer because you get free transfers throughout the World Cup. Spurs are at home to Leeds, a very leaky Leeds defence, even though they've managed to turn the form around in the last few weeks. Perisic and Kane. Perisic playing further forward, but listed as a defender. Looks like a good pick. And Harry Kane, even though Conte said he's knackered, would start given their injuries, and you'd expect him to do well. Man City at home to Brentford. The only danger is obviously the rotation. Foden and Haaland were both on the bench in midweek against Chelsea in the Cup, so that's got to be good for the chances of starting this weekend. Liverpool at home to Southampton, if you want a punt on Trent Alexander-Arnold or Robertson in the defence, or Salah in midfield is a decent captain pick this week, especially if we get news of Haaland not starting again. And Nunes up front, very hit and miss, but for a one-week gamble at home to Southampton, it might be worth it. Arsenal play Wolves. I think a lot of people have got a lot of Arsenal players already, but if you haven't, they're a good option. And United are away at Fulham. Just a reminder that the deadline is at 11 a.m. on Saturday, and by no way is FPL anywhere near the most important thing happening this weekend. So let's all hope we can get a good win on Sunday against those lot down the road. Here's to green arrows to you all. Up the Clarets.
Thank you to Adam for that update and his advice heading into this final weekend. Depending on how quickly you listen to this episode, the advice may still be useful to you, or the deadline may have passed and it may be redundant, but I'm sure there's some advice in there as well for what to do with your team during the World Cup break. Now, there's no quiz question this time due to the fact that we're heading into a four-week break, but if you have any pressing Burnley FC related questions you would like an answer to, then why not get in touch with us on the usual methods, and we'll see if we, or more specifically Dave, can help you. Something to fill Dave's time during the World Cup there. So that's all we've got time for ahead of Sunday's big, big game. Thanks to everyone who's contributed to this episode, to George and Tom for their thoughts, to Matt Silito from the other side for his thoughts ahead of Sunday, and to Adam for his FPL update. And of course, to Dave for putting together all the stats and the history for this week's episode. If you are going on Sunday, then please enjoy the match and let's hope for a big Burnley win and to head into that World Cup break, sitting pretty at the top of the Championship. I've been producer Matt. This has been the preview show from the No Name Ever podcast, part of the TalkSport Fan Network. Until next time.
The No Name Ever podcast is brought to you in association with the TalkSport Fan Network. Natalie Bromley is the host and editor, and the show is produced by Matt Moss. Our resident statistician is Dave Roberts, and our FPL expert is Adam Dennett. The analysis show team is collectively Tom Whittaker, Richard Steele, George Poole, Charlotte Rigby, Adam Dennett and Robbie Kopak. Our music is provided by George Gaskill, and our newsletter team is headed up by Jamie Smith. If you don't already, you can subscribe to our newsletter by visiting nonadnever.substack.com. Our thanks as ever go to our partners TalkSport. We are, as ever, proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.